All right, Arisha, Christmas is officially 8 days away.
Is it really?
Yep.
Wow.
You didn't notice that deer on by my TV that has the countdown till Christmas?
No, because my countdown to Christmas said 49 days till I had a party, and now it says 12, and I don't know what's right.
What party?
My little holiday soiree I had on Friday.
Oh, the one you already had.
Yeah. I never know when Christmas is because I don't have kids.
I know. And I let it get dangerously close this year because, as you know, I've apparently turned into a Libra and couldn't choose an Airbnb.
Ah! Well, it wasn't just you, though.
But
I feel like if it's just you choosing an Airbnb, you do it instantly.
But it was up to me, and I couldn't decide.
Because if you didn't do it, nothing would happen.
Well, the problem is I'm not throwing money around like the baller I used to be.
I know.
Otherwise, I would have booked this thing months ago.
Yeah. This specific one, or just the event?
No, this one's brand new. I literally just found this one. I was like, okay, this seems perfect. It is pricey, but so is everything. It's like 4 days at Christmas.
So you're still throwing money around. Problem solved.
Yep. That's how I've decided to solve the problem, is just change nothing.
Unfortunately, that's what I decided. I was like, starting January, I'm really going to act like I don't have as much money as I do. And I've been running fucking wild.
Yeah. Well, I am excited, though. I'm like, I'm going to enjoy it. It's got a fireplace, unlike your parents' home.
I have tried every time I go home. I'm like, what if we put on that Netflix fireplace on the TV, bring out mattresses, and bunk up? And they say over our dead bodies every time.
That's disappointing.
It is.
Yeah.
I have to curate my own Christmas experience. That sucks.
That's what we, as an adult, that's clearly just what we've got to do.
Truly.
All right. Well, today we are getting into some super sad news.
I know.
First,
Merry Christmas.
I know, with the passing of Rob Reiner and his wife, Michelle. And then we are going to dive into more lighthearted stuff. We're going to talk about Meghan Markle and her dad, the father-daughter duo of the century. Then we're going to talk about Amy Schumer's divorce announcement.
Yeah.
And finally, we're going to talk about Paul Dano and Quentin Tarantino and that whole mess that's currently going on.
An absurd mess.
Truly. And then we got some fun quickie updates. So we'll try to get the mood back toward the end. We'll start sad, get the mood back toward the end.
Yeah.
Okay. So sadly, we have to talk about Rob Reiner. Now, we are recording this a day earlier than we normally would because of travel.
Actually, because of corporate greed.
What do you mean?
Because I have my work meeting all day tomorrow.
Oh, right. For some reason, I thought you were flying tomorrow, but that's Wednesday.
I wish.
Okay.
But same reason, my life being ruined.
Corporate greed, fuck them.
Yeah.
But so we're recording this on Monday, so just the news is very fresh.
Oh, right. I didn't even think about that.
And by the time this airs, there, like, things are coming out so quickly and rapidly. And there's also rumors. And like, until people confirm things, I'm like, I don't even know what to talk about. So we'll get to the facts and the things that we know now. Rob Reiner and his wife, Michelle, were found dead on Sunday at their home in Brentwood. They were found by their youngest daughter, Romy, which is devastating. I cannot imagine being her and how she's feeling and what she's going through right now, because that's got to be traumatizing.
Oh my God. I think I've shared I have a friend who found both of her parents at different times, and I don't wish that on anyone.
Like, how do you mentally recover from that?
I don't know that you can.
Yeah. So authorities responded to a medical aid call around 3:30 p.m. on Sunday when they discovered that the bodies were covered in lacerations believed to be knife stab wounds. Now, very quickly, multiple news outlets claimed that the killer was the couple's son, Nick Reiner. Now, this is according to quote-unquote sources, which is truly insane to me because that's not how investigations work. Like, this isn't some Hollywood buzzy news story where you're like, sources said this. It is an ongoing homicide investigation.
Can you imagine if the DA was like, hey, does anybody at the Daily Mail, can you guys give me an insight into some sources for clues?
Yeah.
Like, it's come on.
Until the police give a press conference or whatever and say, this is the suspect. No one should be reporting about sources. But the police have now confirmed On Monday, they confirmed that Nick was taken into custody and booked for murder. He's being questioned. He has not been charged with anything, but he is being held on $4 million bail. Now, Nick is 32 years old. He's the middle child of Robin Michelle, and he has worked as a screenwriter for a while. He co-wrote the screenplay for the film Being Charlie, which Rob, his father, did direct. The film was about a drug-addicted teen, and I guess he loosely based it on his own addiction struggles. And he has previously spoken publicly about his battle with drug addiction and homelessness, and he had also admitted to once destroying his parents' house in, like, a drug-fueled rage, I guess. So...
yeah.
Clearly, yeah, I mean, it's all alleged right now that he did it. Right. But, I mean, God, you know.
I will. I don't know that I should even say this, but looking at pictures of the family, because, of course, my whole feed is pictures of the family.
Yes.
And looking at pictures of this son, there is something dead in his eyes. It's weird.
There is. I had the same thought earlier today, because if you look at pictures of him from a couple years ago, drastically different than now.
Yeah.
Or recent.
Yeah.
And he does. He looks, there's like a darkness.
There is. And it's such a weird sensation because as a woman of science, I'm very into understanding, like, because like looking at somebody's eyes, it's an abstract thing. But there is something about his eyes where I can't explain it, but it makes me uncomfortable.
Well, and part of me is like, am I just feeling this way because of this story? Or would I have thought that a couple days ago? Yeah. I don't know. You know,
it's weird. His brother looks so full of life in all of the pictures. And it's just, I don't know.
Well, of course, everyone's posting how like the whole family had a photo together not long ago at the Spinal Tap 2 premiere. So it's just
Rob's Spinal Tap was his original directing debut, right?
Yes, yes. He's had an amazing career. Like, he got his start in acting on the sitcom All in the Family, and then he became the iconic director we know him as today. He directed The Princess Bride, A Few Good Men, This is Spinal Tap, and, of course, When Harry Met Sally. A full array of genres.
Truly. And so many of my faves, mockumentaries, rom-coms.
I know. That's, like, that's a sign of a great director, and especially because all of the ones I mentioned were all are classics.
Yeah.
And highly regarded in their genre. So
I don't think you can meet anybody in our culture who doesn't know at least one of these.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So When Harry Met Sally is actually where he met Michelle. And it was because of him falling for her that, spoiler alert, Harry and Sally end up together at the end of the movie. Because originally they were just going to go their separate ways, a la the breakup.
Oh.
And because, like, Rob was super single and he was like, I guess, fuck love. I don't know. But but then he met Michelle and he was like, you know what? Love is real. So I think that's really sweet that
is
it
really
changed
sweet.
The end of a truly iconic movie.
Yeah.
And you don't go that long in Hollywood without making some friends. And a lot of those friends are paying tribute to Rob.
Of course.
Jamie Lee Curtis, who worked with Rob on many projects, released a statement on behalf of her and her husband, Christopher Guest, who is really good friends with Rob and also worked with him. She said, "Christopher and I are numb and sad and shocked about the violent, tragic deaths of our dear friends, Rob and Michelle Singer Reiner. And our only focus and care right now is for their children and immediate families, and we will offer all support possible to help them." Kathy Bates, who worked with Rob on the film Misery, said, "I love Rob. He was brilliant and kind, a man who made films of every genre to challenge himself as an artist. He also fought courageously for his political beliefs. He changed the course of my life." Maria Shriver posted a carousel of photos on Instagram of Rob and Michelle, and in the caption she wrote, "I loved Michelle and Rob Reiner. They were among my closest friends. We raised our kids together from Mommy and Me on up. We laughed together, we cried together, we played together, we dreamed together. We had dinner this past week, and they were in the best place in their lives, loving one another, loving their friends, their family, their country. They never gave up on our country. They wanted to make it better. They always, always wanted to make our world better, and they were willing to fight to make it the country they loved." She ended it with, "I'll miss you, Michelle. I'll miss you, Rob. I love you both. Thank you for your friendship. God bless you both. Life will not be the same without you here. That's for sure." Heart emoji. Now, in terms of wanting to make the world better, Rob and Michelle were both activists. Rob even helped to lead the charge against Prop 8.
Yeah.
To ensure marriage equality in California, which is huge. I think a lot of people don't know that side of him. Like, I think they know that he's political in some way and has been outspoken about like the current administration, but I don't know if they realize how far back it goes.
Right. It's not just new stuff. He's always been.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's always been walking the walk, not just talking the talk.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that. And he really does just, yeah. He's always seemed like just a lighthearted, fun guy.
Yes.
He's always reminded me of the old artistic director at Iowa West. Like, they kind of look similar, but also just their vibe was very similar. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's just like, you told me about this and I didn't know anything about it. Like, I had not been on Instagram or anything. And you were like, have you heard this Rob Reiner stuff? And I was like, what?
Well, at first it was two bodies were found in his home.
Right.
Not even saying who it was, because obviously you don't want to spread false information.
Yeah.
And then just in the span of a couple of hours,
it got.
And you were like, his son? And I hadn't seen that.
Yeah. It got truly wild very quickly.
Yeah. And he's one of those people, whenever I see him on screen, he just lights up the scene, the room he's in.
Yeah.
And he seems like one of those people who you immediately feel comfortable with and safe with.
Yeah.
And those are rare, rare breeds.
I know. There are always a lot of celebrity deaths. In the past couple of years, there have been a ton. But some of them really hit me. And this one did. Yeah. And it's just so sad.
And however, I mean, obviously we don't know what happened. But the one thing we do know is this was a premature death. And those are always very, very hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And violent. Not just, it's like, ugh.
That's like the rumors I'm hearing about it. Like, I don't know if they're true, but they sound extremely violent, like about a fight and throats being cut. And it's like, I don't know that that's true. And I can't report that, like, as anything other than a rumor right now, because how would anyone know other than the people who were there?
Right. Well, I mean, the only thing, I mean, the stab marks, and it's like anything that's going to cause that isn't going to be.
Yeah.
Oh, we just fell asleep and died that way.
Exactly. Stabbings are always a crime of passion. So,
yeah.
But as of right now, as of the time we are recording this, it is still an ongoing investigation. The police are not giving up that much information. I know there's talk of a search warrant that they really want to get for the house, but as of now, I don't think they have it. So I'm sure the whole thing will be solved by Wednesday when this episode gets put up. Like, this has moved so quickly.
Yeah.
So if we missed anything, that is why.
Yeah. All right. Switching gears to a different level of depression. Dare I say a fun and frothy one?
I mean, dare you say it? Something's got to be fun and frothy compared to that.
Oh, my God. So we got to talk about Meghan Markle and her dad. Mm-hmm. I swear, this girl cannot escape the cloud of her dad's drama.
We've been talking about her dad since season one of ETR.
Yeah, his pictures on the toilet.
Oh, yeah.
And also the press, or like the paparazzi photos, staged paparazzi photos.
Right, not, by the way, not available wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, gone forever.
No longer available.
So Meghan's dad is currently in a hospital in the Philippines where he is recovering from a lower left leg amputation. Apparently this was a life-saving surgery after a massive blood clot was found in his leg. Mm. This is according to the Daily Mail.
Okay.
Which I will get to in a little bit. Now, allegedly, Meghan did try to get a hold of her dad and couldn't by phone or email. So she had sent an email and somehow that got out. And her dad was like, I haven't heard from her. This is false news.
Mm.
So then it came out that she had apparently called his phone. He doesn't have the password for that phone. I don't know why he has so many phones.
Mm. Burners.
So Meghan set out to get him a letter, which involved her calling a bunch of hospitals in the Philippines. I don't think she was physically the one calling these hospitals. I imagine she has staff for that, but the news reported it as her doing this.
Of course.
So Meghan did eventually figure out where he is, and she had a letter hand-delivered by a lawyer with instructions that the encounter was videoed so that the clip could be sent back to Meghan to confirm that her dad did receive this letter. And I think this is just a testament to where their relationship is, where she's like, I need there to be actual proof that he received this letter. So when he inevitably goes to the press, she can be like, here, everyone shut up.
I mean, we've all been there.
Yeah, yesterday.
There's a reason I had to record us watching a movie together.
God. God, does that make me Megan or
no,
Megan's
dad? No, you're Megan's dad.
Oh, no. Oh,
yeah.
No.
Just spinning your tails to the news, a.k.a. Caleb Bissinger.
Caleb Bissinger is the news.
Yeah.
Okay, so going back to this, Megan did send a letter to her dad. And this is one of those things where her dad ends up in the news because he's really close to a Daily Mail reporter, allegedly. Caroline Graham, who wrote all of these articles about her dad in the hospital, she's been with him since last week.
What? Like physically in the room or dating?
Physically in the room.
Oh.
She says she got a message, a text message from Thomas that told her about the upcoming surgery. She says he had chosen to break the news of the amputation to me before his own family. She then made a 22-hour flight from Los Angeles to his hospital bedside in the Philippines.
Stalker.
And she's been with him ever since.
That's insane.
Which is just insane.
Are they dating now?
No, she's just really close to him. She says that they have an atypically close relationship and that they speak most days, and she considers him something of a father figure. Mm. He's a rock solid friend who helped her through the deaths of her mom and brother. Hmm. That's how she describes him.
I immediately pictured this woman to be his age.
I don't actually know what she looks like.
But the father figure thing makes me think she's, I guess, yeah, younger. But for some reason, when you first brought her up, I was like, oh, they're the same age. They're going to date. I guess they still could date.
I was going to say, yeah, they could still date.
In this world.
Yeah. So because this is the world we live in, this is all made news.
Of course.
I think primarily the Daily Mail just chugging out this information.
Yeah.
But basically, Megan did reach out to her dad. She also doesn't really want contact with him. I don't blame her. He seems super toxic.
Yeah.
And the fact that he did have a Daily Mail journalist who's remaining at his bedside is probably one of the reasons that Megan was like, I need this hand delivered to him.
Yeah.
To his credit, he apparently didn't read the letter out loud to the Daily Mail reporter.
God. No, but he accidentally dropped it on the floor wide open.
No.
It's like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's healing, I guess.
Oh, good.
That's, and yeah,
this guy,
talk about riding the coattails.
I know.
Such an inappropriate way.
For some reason, every time he ends up in the news in relation to her, it's because of a health thing, it seems. Yeah. Like.
Yeah. Well, because he's like, and not to be Megan's therapist, but it works. He gets her engaging with him in some way, shape, or form. And I think it's especially hard for me and maybe you because we have dads that are literally nothing like this.
Right.
Like, I genuinely cannot imagine a parent sacrificing anything of mine for their gain. It's just very weird.
Right. Yeah, it is weird. And part of me is like, is he doing it to get attention from Megan or is he doing it to get attention from the media? Because it could be both.
So what's really funny to me is the way that these news articles are qualifying them. Mm-hmm. So one was calling. So they called Mr. Markle, a successful Hollywood lighting director, and said that he had been close to Megan, helping with her fledgling acting career in Los Angeles. And I'm just like, tell me how you guys really feel. And they went on to say, like, her now defunct blog. And
oh my God.
He mentored her. And I'm just like, okay. Are we just completely doing away with unbiased reporting now?
What I loved is I was scrolling yesterday and it was like an update on this Meghan Markle letter situation. And it was like, the headline is like, Meghan Markle shoots dad's leg off with a gun. And then I'd scroll and it's like, Kate Middleton feeds the poor by hand. It's like the next article was about Kate Middleton and it was some like glowing thing about her. I'm like, this is absurd.
Yeah.
Like they are just off the rails. But wow.
It's really insane.
All right. Well, speaking of two people who are off the rails.
Okay.
Amy Schumer and her husband, Chris Fisher. There have been rumors for months that these two were heading for divorce. These rumors started in October after Amy wiped her Instagram, and then she posted pictures from one of her classic carpeted staircase photo shoots without her wedding ring.
That's her whole house. It's just that staircase. We'll never see another part of it.
Is it a set? Like, at this point, she's like, get me my staircase set. My photos look the best there.
I hope so.
So 2 weeks ago, we talked about all of the speculation around this. The rumored reasons for the split, according to sources, included that she was over the marriage after losing weight. Mm-hmm. And my favorite, that Chris doesn't get Amy's jokes because he's autistic.
A good reason to divorce. If you don't get my jokes.
Exactly.
We got nothing going on.
Exactly. So after those rumors, Amy posted an Instagram story on December 1st that said, whatever ends up happening with Chris has nothing to do with weight loss or autism. Fingers crossed we can make it through. He's the best. 11 days later.
They couldn't make it through.
Yeah. I don't know what happened in those 11 days, but he is no longer the best. So on December 12th, Amy announced that her and Chris are getting divorced. She posted a picture of them on the subway with the caption, blah, blah, blah. Chris and I have made the difficult decision to end our marriage after 7 years. We love each other very much and will continue to focus on raising our son. We would appreciate people respecting our privacy at this time. Blah, blah, blah. Not because I dropped some LBs and thought I could bag a basketball player, and not because he's a hot James Beard award winning chef who can still pull some hot tail. Amicable and all love and respect. Family forever. Now, this caption is edited because when she first posted it, it had typos galore.
Made it almost unreadable.
Exactly.
In parts.
So I'm like, did she just like quickly get this up so that a fucking line cook that worked with Chris 15 years ago didn't call the Daily Mail? And she's like, I just got to get words out and whatever. It's like, what is she doing?
It does read like a drunken post.
It does.
Or a very high, yes. Like, gorked out of your mind type of a post.
Yeah.
And then you also factor in the adrenaline of announcing something huge.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I know I had a ton of anxiety leading up to being like, okay, we're going to go live with this show, which is obviously the same as announcing a divorce.
Oh, yeah.
And so you throw that in. I'm completely incoherent.
I mean, after the argument you and I got into today before we started recording, we'll have to announce that divorce soon anyway. So
we might as well do it here.
I will say, being candid and honest with our listeners, because that's what we've always done. Mm-hmm. This one was the hardest to recover from and start recording. In the past, we would do this with like Rich and Weekly or whatever, and then we just whatever. This one took time.
Because we had strangers. Fucking getting in our private lives.
We had Liam Garrow with a taser to our neck being like, get back in there.
Be funny or I'll kill you.
Exactly. And do it quickly because time is a ticking.
Yeah.
So a lot of celebrities that are allowed to comment on her post did. And
oh, does she have comments limited?
She has for a while. Maybe these ones were. I don't know. But astronaut Gail King commented. Amy.
Stop it. Oh, my God.
Amy, been there, never easy. Only you could make this announcement with humor and love. Wishing you both the very best. Andy Cohen left the heartwarming comment, best announcement.
Wow, he really spoke from the heart there. Oh, my God.
Yeah. RFK Jr. commented, tell kitchen boy to lay off the Tylenol and maybe he would get your dumb joke.
No, he didn't. For a second. Wait, he didn't. He did not comment.
No, he didn't.
Because honestly, in this day and age, I would believe it.
I'm going to be honest. I chuckled to myself when I said, wrote kitchen boy, because that is the type of shit. But no, he didn't say anything. But there were a bunch of celebrities being like, that sucks or whatever. Now, I'm sure you and the Famies have been wondering to yourself, what does Brooke's husband think about all this?
Wow. Brooke's husband has... thought about pop culture news?
He has a thought. So as you know, Ross went to the Shorzy hockey game last night with my dad and two of our friends. And of course, he imbibed, as one does.
Shorzy's being the game show.
Is a TV show about hockey. The cast members played Kings alumni in a game yesterday. So Ross and my dad and two of our friends got tickets to that. So when he got home, he had another beer. And... this is so I'm like,
should we get him on the podcast?
Yeah, He'll be like, what? I said that? So I'm like researching stories. And jokingly, I say to Ross, how do you feel about the news of Amy Schumer's divorce? And he's like, she's a terrible person. She deserves to be divorced. I'm like, wow, okay. It's essentially, those moments are like when somebody gets a surgery and they're coming out of anesthesia and their family's recording them. That's what it reminds me of.
Yeah.
To ask Ross a question like this.
Has he always felt that way about Amy Schumer?
He's never really shared his deep thoughts about Amy.
Yeah. But I don't know.
Clearly it's been lying dormant and he had to get it out.
It's good of you to create that safe space for him.
Yeah, of course. And then share it with the public on my podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's what being a wife is. If Amy had done something like that, she wouldn't be getting divorced.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So that's the latest on them, I guess. They're going to co-parent and be fine and whatever.
What do you think about the announcement? Because I saw a lot of thoughts.
Like, what about it? What do you mean? Like, just how she did it or?
Yeah. Like, how she did it. Not taking the dissolution of her marriage seriously.
She's a
comedian. Blah, blah, blah.
She's a fucking comedian.
I think it's the perfect announcement.
Exactly.
I want to get married just to have that kind of announcement when I divorce.
Yeah, 100%. I don't see any problem with this announcement. Jesus, who gives a shit? It's not like he died.
Yeah. The only problem with it is I want more details about what happened. Because obviously there's been a lot spoiling. And what happened in those 11 days?
Right. If I'm Amy Schumer, I do think that maybe she was placating a little bit with those previous announcements. So
yeah,
I think so. But if I'm Amy Schumer, I don't give too much away and I turn this into my next set.
I was literally just going to say.
Because what better than your own life experiences if you're a stand-up? Yeah.
Netflix was in the room when they officially divorced anyway.
I know. They're like, can we get the cameras up? It looks like she's got a pen out ready to sign a paper. We don't know what it is.
Yep. We want to be able to cut to this during the next special.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe that should be the beginning. You know, during stand-up specials, how they have like a thing where they walk to the stage?
Yes.
You don't watch a lot of stand-up, but
I don't know. But I've seen a clip or two.
They sometimes have those. Like, hers should be, like, signing her paper and then walking out of the office and onto the stage.
I love that.
So she can hire me to direct if she'd like.
Okay.
I'll take the job.
You know who she probably shouldn't hire to direct? Quentin Tarantino.
Are you making yourself a segue?
I'm making myself a segue. Was it perfect?
It was. It was great.
Thank you. So this is actually a little bit older pop culture news, but this came out, I think, when we were on the cruise.
It did. And I swear to God, without fail, when we were on a trip or not recording, there's so much news.
Yeah, the queen dies.
Right. Well, thank God you got the mic up for that one.
Yeah, truly.
You had to jump off of a sailing boat and swim to the resort.
I did. Anything to get this breaking news out on our podcast. Quentin Tarantino appeared on the Bret Easton Ellis podcast, and he was asked to select his top 20 movies of the 21st century. He put There Will Be Blood as number 5, but he said that he would put it higher if a different actor had played the preacher Eli Sunday. Paul Dano is the actor who played Eli Sunday in There Will Be Blood.
Okay.
Quentin goes on to say the flaw with the movie was Paul Dano and that he was weak sauce, a weak, uninteresting guy, the weakest fucking actor in SAG.
This is a bold claim.
This is a bold claim from somebody who, I'm going to say it, not that great of an actor. I mean, well, actually, he does act, but not that great of a director. I don't love Quentin Tarantino. I think he is a very specific type of director.
Correct. Yeah.
And I can understand that. Not my cup of tea, but also he's not God's gift to directing.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, if Paul Dano wasn't in this movie, Quentin would have put it at number 1 or 2. But because it had this big, gigantic flaw in it, it had to be number 4. So this set everybody off. A lot of people had a lot of comments, and there were a lot of actors, celebrities that came to Paul Dano's defense because it just was truly a drive-by.
Yeah.
It's like you don't even need to put his name in your mouth.
It almost sounds like something personal happened and he's got a vendetta against Paul Dano.
It does, because it's like, well, he also, He comes for other people.
Right. Yeah, I thought so.
He does really like Austin Butler, though.
Oh, good.
He said that Austin Butler would have been wonderful in that role. It's just that Paul is such a weak, weak, uninteresting guy.
Oh, my God.
And so it's just, it's like anybody that takes the time to just shit on another person.
Yeah.
For no reason.
Yeah.
It's like you didn't need to bring him up. You still think this movie is number four of all movies.
Right.
You don't need to bring him up. So Ethan Hawke ended up defending Paul Dano. And Ethan kind of has a connection in that he was married to Uma Thurman, who was in Pulp Fiction.
Right.
Directed by Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
And Ethan was on the Joe Rogan Experience. And he said, that's a great lesson. You know what? I don't think Paul Dano ever knew that so many people loved him. Because a lot of people have been speaking up in defense of Paul Dano.
Yeah.
So as far as I can tell, Paul has not directly responded to this absurdity. But a lot of other people have. Including Matthew Lillard, who I love.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But Matthew Lillard, I think, commented more because he got some stray bullets, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because Tarantino also said that he didn't care for the actors Owen Wilson and Matthew Lillard. And Lillard was like, it hurts your feelings. It fucking sucks. And you wouldn't say that to Tom Cruise. You wouldn't say that to somebody who's a top line actor in Hollywood. I'm very popular in this room. I'm not very popular in Hollywood. Two totally different microcosms, right? And so, you know, it's humbling and it hurts. Hmm. And it's just like, I think that's the thing about actors is there are so many different types.
Yeah.
And somebody who's good for this role isn't good for that role, which I'm sure a director knows.
Right.
But there's no need to just shit on them.
Yeah.
Like if they're a terrible person, shit away. I'm all for it.
Right.
But if they're not good at acting, then in your mind, then don't cast them in your movies. Problem solved.
And also, they must be pretty good to some extent. Yeah. I mean,
well, all's fair notwithstanding.
Well, but none of these people, I mean, the people that he talks shit about, like.
No, I know. I know. I know. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Also, a really good actor cannot be great in one thing and be great in another thing.
Absolutely.
And maybe that comes down to the director.
Look at All About Steve with Sandy Bullock.
Right. Won her a Razzie.
Yeah. That movie was awful. Also had Bradley Cooper in it, weirdly.
I know. Two gems.
So, yeah, Quentin acted like a complete dick, which should be unsurprising to nobody because he is a dick. I don't know why people like him.
He is a dick. He's always been a
dick. He's like a bully. He's a shitty person.
Yeah, he is. And he's a little racist, let's be honest.
A little, yeah, quite.
Yeah. Okay, let's get into some quickies. So, starting off, Josh Allen and Hailee Steinfeld announced that they are expecting a baby. They posted a video on Instagram last Friday announcing the pregnancy. Video is super cute. It's like kind of like retro-y, grainy. I don't know how to say it, but or how to describe it exactly. But in the video, Josh is kissing her belly and she's wearing a shirt that says mother all over it. And then at the end, they're holding hands and they're looking at a tiny little snowman, which I think is really cute.
That's their baby.
That's their baby. Yeah, they made it. So I thought that was really adorable, obviously. I mean, do I even have to?
Did you hear that they're naming the kid Buffalo?
Yeah, Little Buffy, they're going to call it.
Yeah, even if it's a boy.
It doesn't matter, yeah.
Which I'm excited about.
Me too.
Little Buffy Allen.
So also Tate McRae has been in the news. She's been compared to Britney Spears for most of her career.
Yeah.
And John Chu, director of Wicked, is developing a Britney Spears biopic. And even though it's only in the early stages of development, everyone, of course, is wondering who's going to play Britney. Like, he gets asked about this all the time, even during Wicked press. It's like, let's focus on Wicked right now. He's like, I haven't even typed a single letter for this script.
It's like, there's a stranger bum-rushing Ariana. Can you guys shut up about Britney right now?
Yeah, and crazily enough, that was Tate McRae. Just kidding. So, Tate McRae, I think, has been thrown out maybe to play Britney at some point. I don't know if this specific biopic or just like, you should play Britney someday. You know how people say that shit.
Mm-hmm. I hear it all the time.
All the time. I can't walk down the street without being like, hearing Tate McRae should play Britney Spears. Or you mean you. Personally,
I meant me, but yeah, we'll go with that.
Right. To play Melissa McCarthy in her biopic.
Yep. They're like, Melissa, is that you? Did you curl your hair and tan?
So Tate was asked about this by Rolling Stone during a recent interview, and she said, I don't really act. I need to take an acting class before you even consider ever doing anything. I also feel like I look nothing like her or sound nothing like her, so I don't know if I'd be a great fit.
See,
so everyone was like, okay.
I love this.
Yeah, not everybody needs to do everything.
Yeah, and I also love the awareness of saying, I need to take an acting class before I even consider doing something that I've never done. More people right. should do that. Just because you have a name that people recognize doesn't mean you should be acting.
Right. Just because someone comes up to you and says, hey, have you seen the movie She's All That? Well, we're making He's All That. We like your dances on TikTok. Would you like to be an actor?
Absolute blasphemy, and not even as big of a blasphemy as the fact that I started a He's All That script in 2012.
I love that you keep saying you started it.
Yeah, of course. I can't lie and say I wrote it. But that first couple of pages was going to blow everyone out of the water.
Yeah, I believe it.
Another quickie. Mm-hmm. John Cena had his final WWE match this past weekend.
Yeah.
And he lost it.
Yeah. People seemed mad about this. I guess he tapped out.
Right, which I was like, I think, is that the tradition? I don't know enough about WWE. Did you watch this a little bit, right?
I used to watch when it was WWF, I watched it regularly.
Of course you did.
Like, big time wrestling fan, which is just insane.
It is insane.
But it was prior to the John Cena days. I guess the thing is, like, they had him, from what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
They lose to, like, prop up the upcoming generation of wrestlers, like the guy that beat him. But some people are like, the way they did it didn't set him up for any success or blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I don't even know this guy that he wrestled. I've never even heard of him. So I'm so far out of it at this point.
So it didn't even work.
Although that's the first time I've heard his name. So maybe.
I don't know his name at all.
I know. I can't think of it. I can't recall it now. But
every time I hear John Cena, I have to say he is the most... Make-A-Wish granter. Like, grants the most Make-A-Wish requests. And I just love that. I'm not a wrestling fan at all, but I am a big John Cena fan.
He does just seem like a gem.
He really does. Yeah. And I don't want to ever hear anything about him because I don't want to lose that. I've lost it for so many people.
I know. I think he's one of the safe ones, hopefully.
Yeah. One person who I think we're all agreed is not a safe one.
Oh, no.
Andy Dick.
Yeah, my God. He's just,
oh, my gosh. So, also, I think while we were on the cruise, he was found slumped over on the sidewalk after overdosing on crack cocaine that he got from a guy in the street. Initially, he said, I'm not going to rehab. I'm fine. Leave me alone. But he did ultimately decide to enter rehab on Friday in Palm Springs. So, hopefully, he can get the help he needs. He's struggled with addiction basically his whole life. Like, that's been...
Yeah.
He's been in the news always for things that just seem to suck about what he's struggling with mental health wise.
I know. He tweeted me once.
Really?
Yeah.
About what?
Well, this was back. Like, I used to love Andy Dick because I used to watch like news radio. Was he on? Was that he was on? And so I tweeted something so stupid. Like, I want to say it was about a buddy comedy starring me and Andy Dick.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if that's true, but that seems right. And he, like, replied or something. So he was into the idea.
Okay. Get it going.
But I feel like most people who have done improv in L.A. or at least at I.O. have an Andy Dick story because he used to come around I.O. all the time.
Did he perform there or just hang out there?
I don't know. But he'd always get, like, belligerent or whatever and have to get kicked out or whatever. So he wasn't even allowed to be there anymore. But he showed up to one of my classes a day that I wasn't there and like sat in the back with his friend. And of course I hear about it like when I, because I don't remember why I couldn't go to class. I don't know if I was sick or what it was, but I was like, Andy Dick was in our class today.
Like just walked into the class?
Yep. Walked off the street and sat in the room. And of course, he's an alumni. He's whatever. The teacher's not going to be like, get out, Andy. But I think he was being annoying at some point. And they were like, all right.
It's like, that could be such a fun thing to do as like somebody who's experienced a lot of success and coming back and just, but then to be a distraction.
I know. And that's what all the stories everyone from IO has about Andy Dick. They never end well, I don't think. So.
Yeah.
Well, I love the quote about how, because I was like, I need more. How did he end up with this crack cocaine? He says, there was a guy that was my age on the sidewalk and I felt for him. He had kids and he was depressed and he was on the sidewalk. And then he whipped out, sorry, but crack. And I'm like, you know what? I might need a little bit of that. And that's it. What? And I'm like, what in the fuck is happening?
Is he saying, and then he whipped out, sorry, but crack, because we thought he was going to say his dick?
Maybe. I read it as like, I'm so sorry to even have to talk about this horrible drug.
That doesn't
but
seem
it was crack.
Like Andy Dick.
But I think you're right, Val, that it's definitely that. But I just, you know.
So the guy needed the money? Is what he's saying? So he helped him out by buying that crack?
I don't know. I guess I thought of it as he was like, you know what? It's out here. I might as well. It's like if somebody whipped out a Reese's. I'm like, you know what? I do need some Reese's. You're right.
Wow.
Yeah. Different addiction.
And much like Andy, you have overdosed.
I have. I really have.
I found you in a puddle of peanut butter and chocolate one day.
Unfortunately, not the first time and probably not the last.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. That's it for news today. Coming up, Arisha is going to regale us with a trip down memory lane. So stay tuned. All right, Arisha, take us back.
Okay. It's July 19th, 2001. In New York City.
It's always New York City.
It is always New York City. God, the mecca of drama. Mm-hmm. Now, to be more specific, we're in the heart of Times Square. It's a typical hot summer day in the Big Apple, and Times Square is bustling with tourists and New Yorkers alike. Now, school may be out for the summer, but if you're a teenager, you're sitting front and center at the desk of Professor Carson Jones Daly every weekday afternoon.
Yeah, well, you know, it's about
Carson Daly.
Times Square.
There's tear.
Hi, kids.
Hey, I'm Christina Aguilera.
Carson.
I think they're expecting.
Total Request Live grips the nation with its top 10 music video countdowns. As a cult classic initially, that quickly morphed into the literal meaning of pop culture. TRL was the show of our generation. Mm-hmm. And today is a perfect example why. J-Lo's song I'm Real is playing out as Carson comments on how good the chemistry was between her and Ja Rule in the music video. And just as he's telling us about the remix we just heard, all of a sudden someone sings,
love a boy, come on and love me. Give me more.
Carson asks who the hell that was as the camera cuts to Mariah Angela Carey as she sings the next line of her song. She's in an oversized shaded gray t-shirt with Loverboy stenciled in pink shaded graffiti writing. Her hair is pulled back into a high straight ponytail and she's pushing an ice cream cart. The TRL crowd loses their minds. They scream and shout and jump around as Mariah pushes the ice cream cart through the crowd, hugging fans here and there before getting on stage with Carson. Carson's shocked, or so he claims. He asks her what she's doing here, and she tells him she wanted to surprise him before walking to the big window that looks down on the street and shouts out to the fans watching from down there. Carson asks her again what she's doing here, and she tells him that she brought him the shirt she's currently wearing. She then does a mini striptease, pulling the shirt off to reveal liquid gold booty shorts and an army green halter top.
What are you doing here is the question.
I'm here. Can you hold this?
Yeah, sure.
I brought you a present. It's this shirt.
Yes, of course it does. What are you doing? Oh, my God. What are you doing? Mariah Carey is stripping on TRL right now. Is it my birthday that I didn't know about it? Wow.
You like this.
Holy mackerel.
You like this.
Hey, can we get the AC cranked down? The AC, crank it down, get nice and cool. Wow.
It's all downhill from there. What follows is a somewhat erratic exchange between Mariah and Carson, Carson and the audience, and Mariah and the audience. And then, before cutting to the commercial Carson was originally cutting to when Mariah first started singing, the camera pans to the audience as they get popsicles. Note that I said popsicles, not ice cream, mm-hmm. because apparently no one at TRL knows the difference between these polar opposite cold dessert options. But I will not let that blasphemy go unchecked. Now, once we're back from commercial, Carson calls this the bizarrest show he's ever hosted before doubling down and calling Popsicles ice cream. As he keeps reiterating this Mariah visit was unplanned, the two of them get on the topic of ice cream, despite ice cream being nowhere in the vicinity. They both just keep agreeing about how great ice cream is, which no argument here. Mm-hmm. Mariah bounces around topics, potentially starting a clothing line with Carson, making sure the audience does in fact like her halter top, and sharing that she loves all types of people. Until Carson finally remembers he's supposed to be hosting and brings the conversation back to the whole point of this encounter. He announces Mariah's headlining the MTV party next month for pop music turning 20. Carson starts listing Mariah's stats, but she's really not into it. When he tries to confirm with her that she's sold over 140 million records, she says she doesn't know and asks where the cash is because it's not in her bank account.
Oh, damn.
Something I ask myself almost daily at this point. Same. Unwilling or unable to pivot, Carson pushes through Mariah's lamenting and talks about how only the Beatles and Elvis have more number one songs than her. She says she can't even fathom that before telling him what she really wants.
I just wanted one day off when I can go swimming and look at rainbows and like eat ice cream.
Right, right.
And maybe like learn how to ride a bicycle.
Which, aside from the bicycle part, is literally my dream.
Yeah, it sounds nice.
It really does.
Even the bicycle.
Yeah, but we both know how to ride one at least already.
That's true. That is true.
Carson keeps going full steam ahead and tries to wrap things up, but Mariah interrupts him because she needs to do something for her mom. Next thing we know, we see an 8x10 framed photo of Pat, Mariah's mom, and Mariah reads the handwritten note that Pat wrote to Carson.
I'm going to read it in her voice.
Okay.
Hi, Carson. Here's a very, very recent picture of me. Hope you like it. By the way, loved your outfit yesterday. It complimented your eyes.
This is Mariah's mother.
This is my mom. Please tell all the TRL watchers to keep... Now, you can read this. I'm not making this up. Please tell all the TRL watchers to keep voting for my baby girl's lover boy. Mariah's working herself into the ground, and that's not stellar. I'll see you at the 20th anniversary looking exactly like this picture.
Oh, yes.
Keep up the good work. Your newest fan, Mariah's mom, Pat.
Thank you very much, Pat. Where are you? Come here. Come here, baby.
Her photo, which looked like, you know, those senior pictures you take when you're a senior in high school?
Yeah.
It was like one of those pictures, those portraits.
Wow.
Holding the framed picture and still looking confused, Carson intros Loverboy, which is today's song number 4 in the countdown. Mm. He and Mariah then wrap up their little rendezvous with quick promos for some of Mimi's upcoming releases, thus ending one of the most, if not the most, iconic TRL episodes of all time.
Wow.
But I think we did talk about this during the Mariah Carey arc mm-hmm. over on the show that is no longer available for anybody to listen to.
Yeah.
And this has come up before because people talk about this interaction all the time because mm-hmm. it was just so out there.
It was in our trailer for this show.
Was it?
Yes.
God, I've got to get this memory checked. But what's crazy is she ends up getting admitted into the hospital for exhaustion a few weeks later. This was when Glitter preemptively bombed and then fully bombed. So there was like a lot of talk. And Carson the whole time was like, what are you doing here? I'm so surprised. Mm-hmm. And in her memoir, she was like, he knew about it. And everything I know about the industry, I'm like, they all know about it. They're all in on it.
Yeah, she just happened to show up when her song was going to be in the countdown.
Exactly.
It's like, come on.
And the fact that he just kind of keeps doubling down, I'm like, Carson, stop being a little bitch.
I know.
But yeah, that was...
Wow.
And I know if I was in the audience and I had been told ice cream would be giving out and it was popsicles, mm-hmm. I would have rioted. Real fucking hard.
I don't blame you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the story.
Wow. All right. Well, I will now tell my story from my checkered past.
Oh, God.
I was going to say, I wish I had a Mariah Carey themed story to tell. And I kind of do, but it's short. I wrote her a letter once.
Just like her mom wrote to Carson.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to be wearing this. Just kidding. But we had like had to write a story or we had to pick someone to write a letter to in third grade. And I chose her and I'd never heard back.
That's devastating.
Yeah. But a couple weeks ago, I talked about conservation camp. And my bang tutorial, my hair tutorial for sleeping in the woods.
Yeah.
And I said I had another conservation camp story, so I'm going to tell that one today.
Oh, thank God.
I know. Everyone's been fucking waiting.
I haven't been able to sleep.
I know. So when I was a senior in high school, I signed up to be a counselor for conservation camp for the sixth graders when they would come. And I was doing it with my boyfriend at the time, or we were like, I don't know if we were official or we were like very newly, whatever, but it was like so fun and exciting. And we both had to work or got stationed in the kitchen to like help with the lunches and help prep food or whatever. And there were also adults, like adult volunteers that would be working in different places. Some were teachers. That same trip, we actually had to sleep inside because the weather was so bad. So like we stayed there too. And the teachers that were there, this is a little bit of a side story, they prank called one of the male teachers. And I was still awake. Like I could hear them. They had been, some of them were my teachers in the past, like when I was in elementary school.
Oh my God.
And they were just like yucking it up there, prank calling the male teachers. They were having the time of their lives. And I was like, this is so funny.
That is hilarious.
Yeah. So working in the kitchen, there was an adult volunteer there. I don't even remember his name. And we worked like several days together and had a good rapport, good banter. Mm-hmm. We were joking back and forth, blah, blah, blah.
You and this guy plus your boyfriend?
Yeah. Yeah. Like we were all working together.
Okay.
So my boyfriend was a wrestler in high school. He was on the wrestling team. And this guy was also involved in wrestling in some way. I don't remember exactly how, but I just know that he was like at one of the wrestling matches after conservation camp. So one night I'm at home and our house phone rings. And I don't remember, one of my parents answered it and like, it's for you. And I like answer, it's this adult male from conservation camp.
Oh no.
Calls my house to talk to me. And I realize, I'm like, this guy's a fucking weirdo. He's flirting with me.
No.
Like, he was flirting with me during conservation camp. He's calling me at my house. He was an adult. Like, out. I was in high school. I was 18, but I was in high school. And he was a grown adult, probably in his, like, I don't know, late 20s, 30s, maybe? I honestly don't even fucking know.
Was he calling from Epstein's Island?
Yeah, he was. I was like, this is so fucking strange. And the whole time I'm like, what am I supposed to say to this guy on the phone? I don't even remember what he was saying to me, but I was like, how do I get off of this call? This is so fucking weird.
The audacity of calling a child's home.
Yeah.
Speaking with her parent to talk to her is insane.
Agree. And like every time, if I saw him after that, I was like at a wrestling match or whatever, I avoided him because I was like, this is strange.
How long was the conversation?
I honestly don't remember. I think 2 hours, maybe. Just kidding.
No, it wasn't.
I remember kicking my feet. Just kidding.
I was just going to say, twirling the cord around your finger.
I just remember being in the kitchen because that's where our phone was.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a long cord and I like walked over to the sink because I'm a person, if I'm on the phone, I walk around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I just remember thinking, what in the fucking shit? I don't even know how he got my number.
Well, probably the Yellow Pages.
Oh, maybe.
Back in the day.
That's true.
Yeah. I was always lucky because it was always under my dad's name and his last name is different than my name. Not that people.
You're like, I was so
perverted
lucky.
Perverted camp counselors were looking at my number.
But thinking about it now, I'm like, this man was an adult volunteer at a children's like conservation camp.
I know.
I mean, he never like touched me or anything or really, yeah. I don't think even said anything inappropriate. But you know that like when there's just a feeling of like, this is strange.
Well, I was already scared and I'll just chalk this up to the world we live in. Mm-hmm. But anytime you mentioned an adult at this camp, I could feel my insides like tense up like, oh, where is this going?
Yeah.
And it sucks because it's like adults absolutely can be at camp and not be perverts. There are plenty of non-perverted adults.
Yeah.
But in this day and age, I hear camp kids and then adults. And I'm like, here we go.
I know. And we need adults. That's the problem. Still to this day, I look around and I'm like, I need an adult because I'm not one.
I am doing a piss poor job cosplaying at one. I can tell you that much.
Yeah. Same. But yeah, that's my creepy conservation camp story. Not as creepy as the way my bangs looked the next day, though, in sixth grade.
Well, nothing is.
No.
What did your boyfriend think about this? Did he have any?
I don't know. I think he agreed that it was weird.
Yeah.
But I don't remember. I think everyone agreed that it was weird. Like my parents, I'm sure I told.
He was like, it was already weird when he stood behind you and showed you how to peel a potato, but you seemed to think that was normal behavior.
Well, I didn't know how to peel one.
He like holds your hands. And he's like this.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God. But yeah. Yeah. That was it. So.
All right. Well.
Yeah. So next week, guys.
I don't even know how to come out of a potential perverted situation.
I know. Well, speaking of perverts, we are going to talk about plenty of those over on the Burn Book today.
Oh,
so
yeah.
If you're not signed up on Patreon for that, you should, because those episodes are so fucking unhinged and fun.
Yeah. And we got a lot of shit to get to.
Oh, my God. A lot today.
It's Monday and already it's too much.
I know. We do not have an episode next week. It is Christmas.
Yeah. Merry Christmas and also Happy Hanukkah to those who celebrate.
Yes. And also Happy Kwanzaa.
And if we missed any holidays, happy those two.
Yeah, exactly. Happy all the holidays. So yeah, sign up for Patreon. We actually just talked yesterday about some bonus episodes that we want to try to do. We want to try to do more like deep divey stuff for you guys, because I know you guys like that.
Yeah.
I was like, should we do one about Rob Reiner and his life? Because he really had such a great life. And I just think it'd be fun, yeah, to dive into stuff like that. So sign up on Patreon. We have a sleepover video coming from our cruise trip, if you're on the sleepover tier. And we will be back the week of New Year's Eve. We recorded some episodes for that and for the Burn Book. So only 1 week of no episodes. So follow us on Instagram at Brooke Ziffern and at Arisha Skidmore Williams. You can follow the show on Instagram at Almost Famous Pod. Follow, subscribe, share with your friends wherever you listen, especially on Patreon. And we will see you in 2 weeks.
Yeah. See you guys.
Happy holidays.